you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Welcome into the Under Center Podcast in Emergency, Cameron Meredith podcast, if you will. I'm Slavko Bekovic alongside Paul Aspen, two producers here at NBC Sports Chicago. We're joined by our Bears insider, JJ Stankovic, to break down why we think the Bears didn't match the two-year offer that the Saints gave to receiver Cameron Meredith and where the Bears go from here. So, JJ, let's just start with the initial question. What does this mean for the Bears? Why didn't they match it? According to Adam Schefter, there was some concern about the ACL and MCL injury. Meredith kind of unsure if he'd be ready for training camp and the start of the season. How much of that really factored into the Bears' decision to not match the Saints' offer?
Yeah, I have to think that was the reason. And pretty much, you know, the biggest one is that if they weren't confident that Meredith's knee has fully healed and that it's going to be okay, then yeah, you don't want to guarantee a guy $5.4 million over 2 years. The interesting thing here is now, I mean, the Bears now have a need at wide receiver that they didn't necessarily have before, at least on paper, if you were penciling Meredith in into the depth chart. So you have to find a way now to fill that, whether it's signing one of the, you know, last remaining guys, like you said, like a, you know, a Dontrell Inman or like Philip Dorsett or someone like that. And then you still probably have to draft someone regardless of what you do at the end of free agency, you know, in this kind of last stretch of free agency here. I think it probably means a second round pick for a wide receiver who's in play. And maybe that then bumps the need for guard a little bit lower down. Maybe they just move forward with Eric Cush and Earl Watford opposite Kyle Long at guard, or, you know, Hronis Gersu at center, Whitehair and Long as your guards, you know, one of those combinations. Or maybe it means that they don't draft a young cornerback to kind of groom behind Prince Mukamara and Kyle Fuller. So a lot of different things in play here. The draft has the biggest implication because they're going to have to take a wide receiver if they weren't already, and they might have to take one higher than they would have had Meredith still been around.
So this my biggest question, for me, this is more about Ryan Pace than it is Cam Meredith. So, I mean, on the one hand, I give him credit. Like, this is a guy that he found undrafted, and he easily, you know, could have chased him and matched him because that's his guy, and he wanted to tie himself to it because he found him, you know, that kind of success story.
Mm-hmm.
But it's literally the million-dollar question for me. Why not spend the extra $1 million for that second-round tender instead of the original round tender? Because that – you're all but guaranteed that he's going to be back. That's my big – is that a screw-up on Pace's part? Did he do that on purpose? Was the $1 million, obviously not this year, that valuable to them?
Yeah, that's a fascinating question because if you look at it that way, if you gave Meredith the second-round tender, then he's basically back on a one-year deal where, you know, you can try to work out something long-term, but, like, essentially he's back on a one-year deal. Which then kind of turns into a prove-it deal, which for a guy coming off of the ACL and MCL injury that Meredith is, isn't necessarily a bad thing. A one-year, essentially $3 million prove-it deal. You know, and then you run the risk, obviously, of losing Meredith as an unrestricted free agent in a year. But, you know, you at least would have kept him and given him an opportunity to prove that his medicals are okay. So that is kind of an interesting layer in all this, is that had the Bears just given him the second-round tender, he'd still be around. There's no way a team was going to sign a guy coming off of that injury to an offer sheet and then lose the second-round pick for it. So that is a really interesting question that the next time we do talk to Ryan Pace, I think is something, you know, he needs to be pressed on to get an explanation on that, because that is like you said, it's literally the million-dollar question, where was this the Bears – misreading the unrestricted free agent or the restricted free agent market, or was it the Bears saying, well, you know, we're actually not that high on Meredith, so So if a team wants to come and get him, they can basically come and do it. And then if they don't, then, yeah, we're happy to keep him for $2 million, but not $3
million. And just one follow-up, and, I mean, I don't know if this is related or not, but let you answer that. The way they approached Kyle Fuller, let him out, you know, let the market dictate, sign him immediately. Similar, you know, situation with Cameron Meredith. You know, trying to let the market dictate. Is there, like, the approach that they took to both restricted free agents, is there any correlation? Is it maybe something that they could, you know, a fan could look at and, like, do they know what they're doing with this sort of situation? Just that question for you.
It's, you know, I feel like it's probably rare for teams to let two of their, you know, top internal free agents kind of hit the market and let the market dictate what they get. That seems like, you know, it may not be just shared on the surface. That may not be best practices, right? But in the Bears' case, you know, if they weren't confident in Meredith's medicals, if they weren't sold on Meredith being a very good scheme fit, then, yeah, you sort of let the market dictate and say, well, if he's basically at this set price, then we'll match, and if not, then we won't. But, you know, with Fuller, I think in that instance, you had to very quickly match, not only because it was the Packers, but to signal to Fuller, like, hey, you're our guy. And we put this transition tag on you because basically we didn't want you to sign the franchise tag because we wanted to get a long-term deal done. And that's one that, you know, wound up being the case. With Meredith, yeah, you know, if the Bears looked at his tape and looked at his medicals, then, and, you know, came to the determination that it appears they did, then, yeah, it doesn't really matter what the market sets you at, because if you have sort of this deal in mind that you are going to offer him and then his representation says, well, no, we actually think we can get more, then, yeah, you probably let him walk. So it's an interesting sort of dance the pace has done with the transition tag and with the original round tender. And it is one that being said, definitely opens him up for second guessing, because if Meredith goes to New Orleans and it proves that he's healthy and has a big year with Drew Brees as his quarterback, and maybe the Bears receiver situation doesn't work out the way that they've expected it, then this is going to be egg on Ryan Pace's face. And it's going to be maybe to the level of like letting Robbie Gould go, where you really look back at that and say that was not the right decision.
And it could be a 2-for-1 for Pace. If they're putting too much stock into Kevin White and him bouncing back, counting on him to be a reliable receiver, maybe the number three receiver now in this group, you know, a week ago they bring back Bellamy and you're thinking, all right, your five receivers are pretty much set. Then you let Meredith walk and now you have a gaping hole basically at your number two receiver. Clearly they have to address it, you would think. And we kind of thought the same thing last year, and they really didn't do that. They, you know, they added late round Gentry and then they kept him on the practice squad back and forth, and they went into the season with no depth. He can't possibly make that same mistake this year by banking on Kevin White. Does this put too much pressure now on White, assuming he goes in as your number three receiver behind Robinson and Gabriel? Or go ahead.
Well, I mean, that's a really interesting question, and it'll bear out with who they draft. If they go out and take a wide receiver in the second round, or, you know, maybe there's some trade down scenario where they move down a couple spots and take Calvin Ridley, something like that. Maybe it's into the 20s and they take Christian Kirk. You know, I think that definitely presents the possibility of them, you know, drafting a receiver in the first round. But I think more likely you're going to see probably a second round receiver or a fourth round receiver, because they don't have a third round pick as we stand here right now. And, you know, look, there's a risk there, because Sports Illustrated just wrote a really interesting article. The author talked to Ricky Prohl, who's a, you know, former wide receivers coach, former longtime wide receiver in the NFL, who essentially said NFL, like, college receivers right now don't know how to run routes.
Yeah.
There are about five schools that run true pro style offenses. And, you know, a receiver from LSU knows how to run routes. A receiver from Alabama knows how to run routes. A receiver from Florida State knows how to run routes. But everyone else, really, their route tree is maybe half complete when they get to the NFL, if that. And that, you know, that's a problem. That takes a lot of development and a lot of coaching, and there's not a ton of time for coaches to work with college players and just players in general anymore. So that does present a risk, and I think it's why you've seen a lot of first-round bust receivers recently, is because they're coming from programs like, you know, not to single out Kevin White, given he hasn't played a whole lot, but they're coming from programs like West Virginia that run these up-tempo spread offenses that really do kind of keep things simple for the receivers, where it's sort of like you're the A receiver, you're the B receiver, and if they're in man, you run a go, and if they're in zone, you run kind of a rounded-out curl. So that, you know, that's going to be an interesting facet to this, is that even if they do draft a receiver, you still have to develop him. And, you know, I remember last year, I think it was Zay Jones had a lot of hype coming out of Eastern Carolina.
Yeah.
He was really, really productive in college, and I didn't keep up with him a whole lot. Maybe it was because he had Tyrod Taylor thrown to him, but I don't recall him having a very good year as a rookie. So there's certainly a risk involved in taking a receiver in the second round and then expecting him to maybe compete with Kevin White, who's another guy who he's only played in five games in his career. We don't really know how his route tree completely is yet. That still is something that's got to be worked on with him. So, yeah, you know, a lot of question marks created here, but not to totally ramble here, but Cam Meredith, there still would have been a question mark with him because of his medical.
Right.
And, you know, it's not the same injury as Allen Robinson. You know, Meredith was on ESPN 1000 this afternoon on Wednesday afternoon, and he was asked, you know, when do you think you're going to be fully healthy? And he basically said, well, I don't really have a timetable yet. Contrast that to Allen Robinson, who has said every time he's been given an opportunity, I'm going to be ready for training camp. I'm going to be ready for OTAs even. So, you know, maybe it's a kind of a confidence, a brashness thing where Robinson, you know, is so confident that he can't even fathom not being healthy. Or maybe it really is that, you know, those are the reports that they've got, and Robinson knows, hey, you know, if I keep on my rehab, I'm going to be good, whereas Meredith may not know that.
And that's kind of the, like, it's if you bring back Meredith, all of a sudden you got depth. But now that they don't, all of a sudden they don't. And it's like, well, you didn't necessarily, even if he was back, like you just said.
You didn't know exactly
what you didn't know what you're
right.
getting. And then in the same vein, and I get why, but everyone's just assuming Kevin White's either going to get hurt or not going to be ready. And I don't know. Like,
you got to give the kid the benefit of the doubt.
Right. I mean, it's encouraging to see how Matt Nagy talked about him. JJ, you were right there.
Trubisky, too.
Yeah. And I mean, they're very high on him. I mean, yeah, what are they going to say?
Right.
But they're, I mean, unnecessarily glowing about his potential, which, you know, to be perfectly honest, is just still potential at this point. We just don't know. But to that same article you mentioned on the MMQB, JJ, I read it yesterday too, and, you know, you talked about the A receiver, the B receiver, just one side of the field, and going back and looking a little bit, Adam Gase says one of the things he said about Kevin White coming out of West Virginia, he only, or, you know, pretty much only lined up on the right side of the field.
Yeah.
So now,
yeah.
I mean, maybe if you want to think positively about this, okay, the injuries stink, but he has had, what, 3 years now?
Yeah.
And it's a new offense, but to grasp pro concepts, to go through the route tree.
And it's a whole new offense now under Nagy, and you have to wonder how prepared he'll be, not only physically, but knowing exactly what the heck they want to do on offense. And JJ, you know this, in Kansas City, guys lined up all over the field all the time. I mean,
mm-hmm.
Tyreek Hill was all over the place, and he's their go-to guy.
Fifth-round pick, by the way. Granted,
exactly.
There was some off-field that also
sure.
made him drop, but, I mean, that could be a day-three guy, you know, that they could look for.
It's certainly cautious. The Bears need to be cautious with not only White, but expectations for a second-round pick, or if they, you know, go with Ridley or someone in the first round even.
So what's interesting is that I was looking at kind of the Chiefs and how they would generally line up their receivers. You know, we under Nagy's offense, and Albert Wilson, you know, he's kind of viewed, he's what, like 5'11", he's quote-unquote only a slot guy, but he still ran 42% of his routes from the outside. And, you know, Cam Meredith back in 2016, he was 52% of his routes were in the slot, 48 were outside, so I kind of looked at Meredith and was like, well, he's not sort of your prototypical short slot receiver, but he could be almost like this better version of Albert Wilson. You know, obviously, I'm not Matt Nagy. I'm not Mark Helfrich. I'm not the one drawing up the offense here.
Thank God.
So, you know, No, seriously, thank God. The Bears would be 0-16 if I were. But I think that's sort of this interesting aspect of it, is that Meredith did have the flexibility to be both a slot guy and an outside guy. Maybe they think Kevin White is a really good fit opposite Allen Robinson in those, but I still think that anything you get out of Kevin White has to be kind of a bonus this year because of his injury history. And that is, I think, you know, the point that you have to make when you're looking at their, you know, where they're going to draft a wide receiver, is that you kind of have two spins of the wheel, but you might miss on both if, you know, the receiver you draft turns out to not really understand an NFL offense, and then Kevin White gets hurt again, or Kevin White is healthy and not productive. So a lot of moving parts here. I will say that last year, if you do look at the Chiefs offense, I mean, their top wide receiver was Tyreek Hill in the Zebra, and that was going far and away. And then, you know, Albert Wilson was their number two guy, and then they had a couple other guys. You know, a guy named Robinson was like their number three, but he was, you know, not really heavily used. The Bears need to – this not only puts a lot of projection on Robinson and Kevin White and Taylor Gabriel, but it does on Adam Shaheen. It does on Trey Burton, where you can shoulder the loss of Cam Meredith and not having this wide receiver sort of opposite Allen Robinson. You can shoulder that as long as your tight ends can catch the ball, as long as Tariq Cohen maybe develops more as a receiver. You can shoulder it that way. And maybe that's how the Bears are looking at it as, well, you know, we do have enough targets to go around as opposed to last year where we really didn't, you know, outside of the receiver position. So I think that may be part of the Bears' calculation here as well.
So with before we'll just ask you about next week, the voluntary minicamp, what you're looking forward to there. But, I mean, there is a lot of, even in our newsroom, in our Bears kind of team and group, it seems like there's a lot of surprise about the decision not to match him, and almost a lot of like questioning the move. Like, but maybe he's Marcus Robinson. Maybe he's one year wonder. Maybe he's Laurent Robinson, another 1 year wonder. Or maybe he's gonna go down to New Orleans. And I mean, granted, with Drew Brees and Alvin Kamara, put up huge numbers.
Yeah, if he's on the field, you've got to expect he'll put up some decent numbers. I mean,
with that offense,
right? It's Drew Brees. You got to give him the benefit of the doubt.
So voluntary minicamp next week, JJ, just give us, I mean, there's Trubisky, there's Nagy, but is there any kind of storylines? Give us like one or two that you're really looking to dive in there, and or who you're really looking to talk to that maybe aren't like one of the major or main storylines.
I want to know how Nagy and Trubisky and Helfrich are, and Dave Ragone for that matter, I want to know how they're all sort of playing it right now. I want to know how that sort of marriage, specifically of Nagy and Trubisky, is getting along. Because that, you know, it won't matter if the Bears didn't re-sign Cam Meredith if Mitch Trubisky's really good.
Right.
It will be just fine if Mitch Trubisky takes a big leap in year two and winds up being one of the better quarterbacks in the NFL. It won't matter. So that's sort of, this is kind of the early stages of that relationship right now are sort of underway. And, you know, I just want to know, you know, Nagy talks a lot about how when he met with Trubisky during the draft, how it was very free-flowing and fluid, and, you know, he could just tell that Trubisky liked talking football and, you know, was very knowledgeable. I want to know if he still has that, you know, if that sort of early relationship between the two of them, if that still is kind of there, and how that's kind of grown and how that's shaping what the Bears' offense is going to look like. You know, beyond that, I'd like to kind of know, just continuing on Trubisky, but how has he sort of embraced this role as a leader? Because, you know, now you're in year two, this is one of the youngest teams in the NFL. How is Trubisky kind of, now that Mike Glennon's not there, now that Mark Sanchez isn't there, how has he kind of assumed that role and taken it on? You know, I think there are a lot of other leaders on this team, you know, a lot of guys who seem to already really enjoy each other. You know, I think bringing Benny Cunningham back into that running back room was kind of an underrated move for the entire locker room. You know, I think that some of these new guys like Allen Robinson and Taylor Gabriel have been, you know, you follow them on Instagram and they're always posting about, you know, what they're doing with their teammates and all that. And it seems like they've got a pretty good team spirit. That doesn't necessarily win you games, but, you know, right now, went to a new coach and a lot of hope and everything, it's good to see that. So I just kind of like to see where Trubisky's role in that whole good feeling around Hallis Hall has been.
Well, JJ, thank you for joining us, and obviously thanks for the updates. We'll stay tuned into your articles on NBCSportsChicago.com.
For Paul Aspen and J.J. Stankovic, I'm Slavko Bekovic. Thanks for listening to the Under Center podcast. Make sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Audio Boom, and Stitcher. We'll see you next time.